Hello, I'm Will Shires and this is Talking Trucks. In this episode, I'll be chatting with Renault Trucks electrification guru, Andy Scott, and hearing about Renault's electric dreams. While there's no doubting that it has big ambitions in terms of volumes, one of the key questions is, will it be held back by the UK's charging infrastructure? Andy, thanks for joining me. Now, you're the head of electromobility and head of product development at Renault Trucks. That must be one of the safest jobs in the industry.
It's certainly one of the busiest, Will. There's a lot to go at, and it's actually quite tricky because the electric element, of course, is very busy, but you can't take your eye off the core product because the huge majority of our sales are still diesels, obviously. And there's quite a lot happening in that arena as well.
Yeah. But, of course, we're here to talk about electricity today. And do you want to tell us what we're sitting in at the moment?
Well, we're in one of our early Bringe D-E-Tech models. This is a 16-tonne. It's a 16-tonne just as a vanilla urban delivery spec. But we've put a few little clever bits in with the bodybuilder. We've worked on this one with TVS and Defleet SP components as well. And this has a lot of environmental features. It's 230 kilos lighter than a conventional box body. It uses recyclable plastics. It uses recyclable aluminium, obviously. And the intention is to create as strong a sustainability story with this product as possible. And we have this based at our Warwick office just to show people around and to tell the story.
Okay. Do you want to talk us through the product range? Because I know as I was driving up here today, there was an announcement, a press release came through about the electric C and T. So do you want to tell us what you've got at the moment and what's coming?
Well, today's range starts with the Master E-Tech at 3.1 and 3.5 tonnes. So that's been here since 2018. We then were sitting at in the D and the D wide, so the 2.1 and 2.3 medium heavy duty products are here in a whole range of configurations. But as you say, today's the day that we've announced the C and the E, C and the T E-Tech, showing an interesting little tweak in there because these are a hint to what comes next in the wider product range, because they feature an extended nose, for example, and some of the features that we'll see coming through on the
diesel. I saw on my phone just a quick glimpse of the picture. That looks interesting.
I was very pleased with the Evolution upgrade because it changed the face of the truck. But this just takes it a step further again. So it's exciting times. There's a lot happening, as I say, in the wider product development field, but obviously specifically with electric.
Now, what sort of range will the new ones have?
Both the C and the T E-Tech are designed to come into mainstream applications. The tractor units are not going to do long haul yet, but they would have a range typically of 300 kilometres on a single charge. Depends what you're carrying, of course. So that will drop a little bit if you're at full weight. C will again depend what you're moving around. We'll be interested just to see how strong an appetite there is from the market for that product, because it's an IP4 Tridom rather than a conventional IP4, so operators need to look quite carefully at what they're trying to achieve. And then we will obviously give them the best vehicle for whatever jobs that they want to do.
Now, when I ask truck manufacturers about the range of electric trucks, they always give a figure, but it's always the best case scenario, isn't it? Do you think, as manufacturers, you should be giving the worst case scenario?
Well, let me answer that question directly on that. Will, for that 300 kilometre figure, the worst figure that you would see is probably something in the region of 220 kilometres. Okay. So you'll see something like a sort of 70 or 80, so in that case, 25% drop off if you're running at, in this case, 44 tonnes, using its all of its capability, if you like. It's always a tricky argument. As you know, in the truck industry, we quote real figures. That's the difference between us and the car world. Yeah. So I'm still nervous about WLTP figures for vans, because actually they're not real world. They're a theoretical test that nobody can replicate. So I'm always much happier declaring some real world numbers that we have confidence and we will stand behind.
Okay. So when the long haul trucks do arrive, what sort of range will they have, and where would the cutoff be before you're suggesting they go operators go to hydrogen fuel cell instead of battery?
There's probably a company line and a personal line on this one, Will. The company line is that we will offer all of those solutions. For me, I actually think because hydrogen is still a couple of years away from mainstream applications, my personal view is that operators will build experience and confidence in battery electric, and that what we will see is hydrogen being used only in the applications where there is a very specific need for it, meaning that they're either working at full weight or they're traveling particularly long distances where the hydrogen solution is more operationally suitable. The other challenge with hydrogen, of course, is that we still haven't got a green hydrogen solution.
No.
In terms of the infrastructure and the supply of that, although there is money being spent by government to try to create that, particularly on the east coast of England.
See, it fascinates me. You've got the likes of the Triton Group, which is Scania and MAN, saying they won't be going down the hydrogen fuel cell route at all. So how can they do it with batteries alone? Are their batteries better than yours?
I think everybody has access to fundamentally the same technologies here. I think they are taking a slightly bolder statement than the one I've just made, which is that actually batteries are moving at such a pace that they expect those to meet the needs. Certainly in the UK, we don't really do true long haul. We don't do the sort of distances that would be familiar to those on continental Europe or indeed in places like the States. So for us, the only instance where I would say hydrogen has a genuine competitive edge is if you need, for example, to bring fish from where they've been landed in Aberdeen through to the south coast to be exported, you know, perishable goods, or where you absolutely must have the biggest possible payload. So if you're moving steel or some of those very heavy weights, where again you want to take off the weight of the batteries that otherwise would compromise the operation slightly.
Okay. Now, is it fair to say, up to this point, you've been going for niche markets? I'm seeing some... Well, you've got your low-entry refuse truck for a start, haven't you? Do you see Renault has been able to pick up some new customers by going after these niche sectors?
I'm not sure I would agree with your definition of niche. If I look to use the low entry bin wagon for a second, that's where the market is. You know, the challenge that we have in terms of targeting that market is the municipal sector requires low entry for obviously driver and operator safety. It makes a lot of sense. So we went away. We said, right, if that's what the market needs, then we'll engineer that. The electric vehicle market at the moment is dominated by electric bin wagons, and clearly Dennis Eagle have been in place for some time. They have the established market and they've been able to supply some vehicles in. Electra came along and brought their offer in. What we're finding is a great deal of interest in that product. It's a niche, but it is the sector which is most favourable from a total cost of ownership point of view. So the economics of buying an electric bin lorry are much, much stronger than for any other vehicle type. And in truth, our view as a business is that nobody should buy a diesel bin lorry now because the economics and the other benefits that come from that are so much greater. In terms of the other sectors, what we're trying to do is genuinely respond to customer needs. As you know, we brought the first electric skip wagon in with Recycling Lives. Their business needed an environmental solution. Their fleet did not lend itself to conventional vehicles. So we said, well, actually, we'll engineer a skip wagon for you. We're bringing the first electric concrete mixer into service with Tarmac, literally as we speak. Again, they have a big strategic challenge. In the meantime, we've got the vehicles working with Warburtons, with Tesco, with Carlsberg Marston's, and we've got some others coming in into the conventional distribution sector. We will happily talk to anybody about electric and hopefully find a solution for their needs.
Now, I saw my first electric Renault in Lyon. It must have been about 7 or 8 years ago now. And I've been driving them in the UK for 2 years at least.
Yeah.
So how many are actually on the road here in the UK now?
Sadly, we're still in single figures. We are like everyone else. We've recently taken an order, which sadly I can't give you the details of. But for a double figure number. But we have the same challenge with bodybuilders and lead times that everyone else has. So those vehicles won't come into service until July next year. So it remains small numbers. But to an extent, that's We're winning hearts and minds. Our demonstrator program has been very successful to the point where now our dealers are bringing those into service for their own local operations. And what we're doing, Carlos Rodriguez is our MD. As you know, Carlos is sort of French Portuguese, but he's adopted a very English phrase that says it's bums on seats.
Yeah.
And what we are finding is that when people experience the truck, the data that we've given them to say this is how it should work is reinforced by the experience, and then we start some serious commercial conversations about how they can bring vehicles into service.
Okay, because I think I'm right in saying there's well over 500,000 electric cars on the UK's road at the moment. So why has the take-up been so slow? Is it that the product hasn't been there, or there hasn't been the confidence, or it's just not the right vehicle for the application?
Well, I'd certainly counter the last one. I think what we have done from day one is seek to engineer a product to a specific application. So if you started with vehicles one and two, one was a vehicle for sewers, a waste vehicle operating in commercial waste in the Bristol area. The other one was working delivering bread for Warburtons in central London. Both of those vehicles are entirely fit for service, and the operators have had a very good experience with those. The reason for the decline, these are expensive pieces of kit at the moment, and we're in that cleft stick where we haven't yet got the volumes that will enable us to drive down the cost. And rightly, you know, a lot of businesses, we've had a few challenges in the last couple of years, as you well know. And frankly, new vehicles of any type has not been at the top of many people's priority list.
No.
They've been saying, right, how do we stay in business? How do I support my people through COVID? And so there have been a whole number of factors. But everyone is different, and everyone has reached a different point in that sort of process. What I find really encouraging is that some of those operators that have ordered and run their first vehicles have now come back and started to order the replacements for the next vehicles to come into their operations. And that selfishly is very encouraging, because they've proven the pudding, if you like. They've driven the vehicles, they've got operator buy-in, they've dealt with the simple sort of practical challenges of putting charging infrastructure in place. And so they're saying, yes, this is part of our transition. Right now we'll move from first gear into second gear, for example. And in time, we'll see much bigger numbers coming through.
And I suppose those repeat orders also prove that they're not just ticking the green box, you know, to keep the shareholders happy and to get the positive PR.
I was with two very big fleet operators just this morning speaking about their aspirations for decarbonising their fleets. And actually, they're much more aggressive than I would be in that agenda. They're saying, look, this is unquestionably... You had Paul Fox speaking to you a few weeks back about the fact that these are vehicles for today. They're not vehicles for tomorrow. So to hear it from some very, very big operators, you know, responsible for literally hundreds of vehicles, saying, actually, we're going to bring these into service. They were talking in this instance about the tracked units. So we're talking about... both rigids and Arctics in their case. So it's very encouraging that some of those big players are willing to say, yes, this is for us. Help us make it work.
What I find interesting is when I look through the commercial motor archives, you go back 100, 110 years, and you know, we've just convinced all the operators to get rid of the horses, they've altered the glue factory, get a truck instead, and then it's a choice. They're either going for steam, or they're going for a combustion engine, or they're going for electric. And electric was really, really popular up until the 20s. It was sort of a VHS Betamax war going on, wasn't there?
You're absolutely right. And actually, it was our first electric vehicle was built in 1923. It was a Berlier hearse. And I use this as an example. It's not new technology, absolutely not. Everybody, people of my age at least, are very familiar with electric milk floats that used to deliver their milk every morning. But actually, the reality is we still have to find vehicles that are fit for purpose in these applications. And if I use the hearse as an example, it didn't have to go far, it didn't have to go fast, it didn't have to carry much weight. They wanted it to be zero emission because clearly there's a cortege walking behind it. I'm trying to bring, trite as it sounds, bring the same approach to our product planning and our customer conversations today. Tell me what you as an operator need to do, and I'll see how we can bring a decarbonised, a zero carbon solution to make that job possible.
I see. Okay. So do you think if that war between combustion and electric had been won by electric 100 years ago, where do you think we'd be now? Because that technology would have moved on at an incredible pace, wouldn't it?
I was having this conversation with a much cleverer person than me just again in these last couple of days. This is someone who's very experienced in the electric world, and actually did a lot of work in the UK with electric vans going back to the late 1990s. And he was saying that actually the technology was fine, but the market wasn't ready. I think that's the change that has happened. So what would be different? Well, simply electric vehicles would be commonplace. We would have addressed some of the questions about energy supply, which are still front of mind for people today. But we would just take them for granted. And I actually think in a few years' time, we will take electric vehicles for granted again. I think people will just think, hang on, why did we make such a fuss about this? When we get used to electric vehicles in our cities, it's already beginning to happen with cars. People who have had an electric car for a period of time are now saying, well, actually, no, I wouldn't go back to diesel. And we're seeing that with these few starter vehicles, if you like, that have gone into the commercial vehicle market as well. The same thing applies.
Yeah. Okay, so we know the charging infrastructure isn't there yet. I mean, there's no public truck chargers at any of the motorway services, as far as I know. But what about the national grid? In your opinion, are they ready for a widespread adoption of electric trucks?
I share this with operators who ask rightly the same question: how am I going to power my trucks? There is an enormous amount of investment going on. Graham Cooper, who leads the team at National Grid, has been very forthright about how much money they as a business are investing in renewable energy. He's saying, look, it's running at sort of seven times the national rate. He talks about the figures for renewable energy from wind farms running from 10 gigawatts as it is today to 50 gigawatts by the end of the decade. So it's really important to have that in mind. There is still a challenge about getting the energy in the right place at the right time. But again, there's work happening behind the scenes. There's a project to electrify the motorway service network for cars, which is called Project Rapid, the Rapid Charging Fund, to give it its proper title. We have an understanding from the Department of Transport that will be extended to include commercial vehicles as well. So we will start to see some infrastructure in our service areas, probably during 2023 and particularly in 2024. And some of the work that's going on from government, they're investing in a zero-emission road freight trial, the ZERF trial, for electric truck units, and they're looking there at megawatt charging. So these things are all happening in quite a short time frame. And the point really is for operators, ask the questions by all means, but also respect the answers. Some of these changes are happening and will affect your vehicle choice in a very short period of time. Certainly, I spoke with one very, very big national operator who's planning for 2030, basically. And their internal expectation is that most of the cities that they operate in will have some form of zero emission zone by that time frame, yeah. In which case they cannot afford not to have electric vehicles available to do that job, because otherwise they just lose that business to somebody who has.
Yeah. Now, a few weeks ago, I was at the launch of the new contract hire company, Vertellus, who have 30 electric Renault trucks on the fleet. I think I'm right in saying it's 10 boxes, 10 curtains, and 10 fridges. And they're going to be loaned out to potential customers for 3 months at a time to see if they sort of dip the toe in the water, see what they think of. Do you think it's a good idea?
This is a try before you buy offer.
Is that long enough, 3 months?
It should be, actually. I mean, I'm delighted, because 30 vehicles is a very significant investment in the principle. We have probably four or five demonstrator vehicles within Renault's fleet, so I'm talking about suddenly six times that number being available.
The biggest electric fleet in the UK, isn't it?
It's ironic, but yes, it is. And it's a real statement of intent from the Vertellus business and from Renault Trucks who are supporting it. These are what we call the EV discovery element of the Vertellus offer. I think the initial response has been really very, very pleasantly surprising. Not because of it's not the big names. These are the people who are just genuinely interested and want to say, well, hang on, what does it mean for my business? It's not the perfect solution, because it's an 18-ton box, or it's an 18-ton curtain aside and so on. What it does do is give people the hands-on experience of a vehicle in their operation, servicing their customers, and gives them the opportunity just to see if it works or doesn't work, or see where the weak points are. It's great. The bit which you've not mentioned, of course, is that it includes the charging infrastructure, which comes as part of the offer. So again, that nobody has to invest any significant sum of money to put charging infrastructure in place, because it comes with the truck. It comes on the back of the lorry, literally.
If you were in government, what one policy would you introduce which would increase the interest, the uptake in electric trucks?
Those who know me better know I've been a little bit critical of government policy. I think we have a government that is both reluctant to incentivise and reluctant to legislate for the change that's going to come. They're relying on the market to do so. I think a couple of things that I would immediately ask for. I would look for a 2-ton dispensation for a genuinely zero emission vehicle.
Okay.
So at the moment we've got a 1-ton dispensation. Ironically, those operating in mainland Europe, in the EU, have a 2-ton dispensation. That is particularly important when you get into the higher weight levels. It just gives that little bit more flexibility and that little bit more cover. I would love to see more incentives for vehicles. I think if we saw what happened in the bus market, the bus market has been transformed by a very generous incentive program from central government. They seem to not want to replicate that. I mean, I'm sure the bill would be much higher. Clearly, the economic climate at this point means that every budget is under pressure. So I can't see it happening. But those would be the two areas that I could immediately ask for.
Okay. Now, one obvious question, which people must be asking all the time. What's wrong with the diesel engine?
Well, the diesel engine has I've had exactly this conversation. Diesel engine has made huge progress, and in many senses, Euro 6 and Euro 7, which will follow, is a fantastic offer. We still have two issues, and ultimately, a diesel engine is burning carbon. So we have two things. One is we're creating air pollution, whether we like it or not. We have particulates, we have CO2 coming out of the tailpipe. And therefore we're creating, or we're exacerbating the problems of global warming. I think what we have to do is maybe just, those of us who are a little bit longer in the tooth, just take a more future view than maybe we have as an industry, and actually recognise. When I joined Volvo Group, the Renault Trucks part of it, back in 2014, and one of the things that I recognised at that time was Volvo Group recognised that transport is an historic part of the problem in terms of air quality and pollution, and even at that time was making very specific commitments to help address that. We're stepping up today to do that. An electric vehicle is a huge step forward in terms of the environmental credentials. It is a part of our future that we have to embrace, and my desire is to see that work for more and more operators in as short a time frame as possible.
Okay. Right, one more for you.
Go on.
If Carlos came over to you now and said, I'd like to change your job title to Head of Diesel Product Development, and you get a nice big pay rise, would you take the job?
No, I wouldn't, actually. It's actually a very easy question to answer. I started this conversation by saying, yeah, look, diesel remains important to us as a business. I was with a group of people this morning who are... I said to people, find somebody as committed to electric as you are and work with them. And I'm very happy to be in that arena. I've reached a stage in my career where I don't need to prove anything. I'm very happy now to be part of working hard behind the scenes to change the industry, to play a small part in that, admittedly a very small part. But I believe in what I'm doing, and I'm happy to be doing what I'm doing. And so I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing.
Excellent. Andy, thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure.